Jones. Jones and Mike. Real radio for real people who are real enough to realize they really still have a few things to figure out. Jones is a hockey-playing, city-living, vegan bachelor who practices transcendental meditation when he's not biking to shows and Cub games. Mike's a beer-swilling married father of four from suburbia. His motorcycling, marathoning, and martial arts are pretty much on the shelf while he limos children all over town to their activities for the next decade.
Sound familiar?
It's, you know, shit dudes say.
About family.
Women.
Philosophy.
Politics.
History.
People.
Money.
Pop culture.
Kids.
Fighting.
Business.
Life. Join the conversation.
312-981-7200.
Hashtag Jones and Mike. 24/7. Worldwide. At jonesandmike.com. This is Jones and Mike.
Jones and Mike. Jones and Mike.
It's time!
It is Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. You can call or text 312-981-7200. The one-year anniversary of Jones and Mike.
I know. This is incredible.
On the mothership, Jones.
This is incredible. I did not anticipate celebrating like this.
You have pants on for a change.
Well, this is a big occasion.
I appreciate that.
It's a big occasion.
Really appreciate that. I had the dream again, though.
I know.
I had that dream. The dream, it haunts me, frankly. And I had it two nights in a row, and last night it was so vivid. I, you know, obviously Thanksgiving night, I'm processing all the toxins out of my body.
Right?
My liver's just working overtime. The kidneys, everything, the organs are under assault.
You figure after 41 years it would have figured it out by now.
Yeah, yeah. You would think I'd be a finely tuned toxin-removing machine at this point.
But you're not.
But I'm not. So I woke up in the middle of the night after having the recurring dream where I walk in late into a radio station. I'm late, and I don't know how anything works.
Right.
And
you do have this all the time.
All the time. But last night, it was so vivid. Last night in my dream, I always walk into The Loop, which is 97.9 The Loop, the last station I worked at.
Many moons ago,
years ago. And in this dream, there's a woman who's, you know, I'm replacing some woman. And it's one of those dream women, not a dream woman, like a character in a dream, like a
right.
composite person.
Yes.
Where you don't really know, oh, that's my cousin, that's, you know, my neighbor, or that's actually a person I worked with. No, this was just some dream woman. And we didn't like each other. It was like Seinfeld and Newman.
Right.
Where I walked in, I was like, oh, you. And she won't show me how to do anything. I don't know how to push any button. I don't know anything. I don't know how to put in CDs. There's dead air. I'm panicking.
First of all, you're dreaming about CDs.
Well,
in 2015.
No, I know. And like these CDs, they had to go in special cartridges and like, you know, just totally ridiculous. And there's dead air. And then they're calling me. The management's calling me. So far, they have made it where I don't have to push any buttons.
No, we're
just your buttons.
Aubrey's got our back. We're good to go. I do have to say, though, this thing with you and dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've known each other since we were 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I just even, I think it was it this morning? Because I took a little nap today, so I'm a little lost on my days. Mm-hmm. But I think it was this morning you reached out to me, and I just wanted to check in with you about the show. And it's these dreams that you get drive me nuts. You always try to paint me as the narcissist. Single, don't have kids,
yeah.
I only look after my own.
Self-absorbed.
Self-absorbed,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the Gen Xer millennial. That's mm-hmm. how you kind of paint me.
That's me pushing your buttons.
But every 3 or 4 months, you do this to me. Dude, I had a dream, man. It was weird. And I was just thinking to myself, like, what if I show up to the studio and we go to GN?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, right when we go on the air, you just open up the mic and then you just start cursing me out because you were mad from something I did 17 years ago.
Yeah,
you do
got
this.
It out for me, Joan.
Yes. For every 3 or 4 months, even though I'm the narcissist, you think for the last 26 years
yeah.
that I have been plotting out your destruction.
I'm standing in a tux. I've just gotten my Academy reward. And then you push me into a pool.
Right. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
In front of everyone.
You have been doing this. You have been driving yourself nuts.
No, I don't believe that at all. That's just me pushing your buttons.
You've been making yourself nuts with dreams for years.
The concept of putting in your 10,000 hours. At what point does the self-doubt end? Are you entitled to success, Jones? Is
no.
our generation different from the millennials, for example? They're the pincushions where people like to, you know, the millennials, man, they just want everything handed to them. Do we feel like that on some level? I want to know. I want to know more about this from you.
Do I feel... I see, that's the thing. I really hang with millennials. So that kind of makes me a little odd in this discussion.
Yeah, you're a big millennial backer.
I am.
Because you're trying to bed as many millennials as you possibly can.
That's not why.
You narcissists, you guys travel in packs.
Right. No, that's not why.
312-981-7200. More on this topic. Are millennials entitled? Are you entitled? It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Bears fans, join Chicago Tribune Sports Plus for a sports-only membership that includes award-winning coverage, great perks, and more at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. All right, Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Jones, they're already selling Riot Fest tickets for next September.
I know.
Already selling Riot Fest tickets.
It drives me nuts. That's honestly, that's the sign that rock is dead. When you don't even have to announce the bands. You don't even have to come up with the lineup. It's just purely, it's purely an event. Riot Fest, Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo, any of it.
Yeah, you don't, why would you want to buy tickets to something that's 9 months away?
Because you just want to go to an event and it really doesn't matter who's there. So it's kind of, it's almost like going to a Super Bowl party when you're not a football fan. You just want to be a part of the Super Bowl party.
And so have you gotten me something for Christmas? Would you ever consider gifting someone tickets? Hey man, I know that you're in, or is that a millennial thing, Jones?
To gift someone tickets?
Or just would, yeah, to make plans for next September now.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I can't imagine that being a good gift, I have to say. And I although actually your point to millennials, I think that would be a good gift for millennials because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to them who's going to be at the show.
For Thanksgiving, I was kind of concerned because I cooked for my family. It was the first time my mom's had Thanksgiving for 50 years. God bless her. But this was the first year she passed the mantle to someone else.
I made a dish for the first time this year as well.
Okay. What'd you make?
I made rutabagas.
And?
You know, it ended up not being bad, but, you know, I only ever have to cook for myself. And the family that I went to go to on Thanksgiving, I was at their house weeks ago, and one of the aunts in the family, wonderful lady, but still kind of almost tauntingly said, you know, why doesn't everybody else do a dish? Why doesn't everybody do a dish? Brian, even you can do a dish.
Even the vegan.
Yeah. And she goes, well, I mean, we could give you the rutabagas. And as soon as she said it with that tone, I'm like, I'm putting everything I have into these rutabagas. So I've been making rutabagas for weeks. So, no, seriously, every Sunday, like while I'm like bears, like real men with like barrel chests, you know, they drink beer and they're making the sausage.
Yeah.
I'm like peering out from the kitchen, like watching the place, but like still mashing my rutabagas, trying to get it right because I've never done it before.
And you got to do it for more. You have to do it for 10 people or 20 people.
Right. So then I was making like mounds of rutabagas and eating them all week. But then the day of, I switched up the recipe. I had this other idea. And then it was kind of weird because I was kind of trying to prepare the rutabagas and myself at the same time. And I was getting in that awkward mode of like, do I have I allowed the rutabagas enough time to boil? Then I have to shower. And then I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be naked making these rutabagas.
Oh, God.
No, I really did. I was
and
like,
they have to breathe. It's like wine.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Rutabagas. And I was like, oh,
you
my God.
You have to bring them up to room temperature.
Yeah. It's almost like something I'd have to disclose to someone. Like, yeah, I made this, but I made it naked.
Yeah.
But I ended up, I didn't have to do it. Everything timed out. It was good.
No,
I have to say, I was pretty happy with myself. Vegan rutabagas.
Yeah, people don't think the vegans can handle Thanksgiving, but you just did.
I did. I just had to use like a little vegan butter. Boom.
I just went through the 24-hour period where I hold my breath because if someone's going to get sick from my cooking, I'll know about it within 24 hours.
Right.
Oh, your niece, she was up all night. And I had the stuffing. I had, you know, so I had a lot of stuff that could get people sick. And so this last 24 hours, I've been on pins and needles. Before that, I was on pins and needles that my nephew was going to come over. He's a giant of a man.
He is a big kid.
He's early 20s, a millennial.
Yes.
And we play fantasy football. There's a smack room, and I was smack talking him. Millennials don't give you any feedback. I don't know if he's into it. He's laughing with me, angry. I don't know. So I was kind of with trepidation if he shows, because if this guy got a hand on me, it's over.
Oh, he's cartoonishly large.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And a gentleman, a gentle giant.
But they're always gentle till they snap.
Well, right. That's what, yeah.
And then it's
and
over.
To be beaten about my head and torso with my nephew's fists in front of my children in my own house.
Right.
That's an indignation that I was not, you know, looking forward to. He ended up not coming. But this generation of people, they're painted up to be Fabergé eggs. But I don't know if that's true.
See,
and you say it's not true.
It's not entirely true. Like,
they're
millennials,
not really big on self-deprecation. They're not big on, you know, kind of our generation and earlier generations. They kind of, that's how men were. They kind of razzed each other.
Yeah. You can't talk. I would say this. You can't razz a millennial the way that we were razzed growing up. Now, I don't have all these problems that people have with them. They say they're lazy and, you know, they're into themselves and they're narcissists. I get it to a degree because with Facebook, Instagram, it's just kind of their life. But at the same time, I have to say, I work with millennials. I'm friends with millennials. Like, I hang out with them. I'm actually more comfortable oftentimes with millennials than I am Gen Xers. So, but I do have to say, in terms of getting in their face playfully, joking around with them, it's a little more touchy of a crowd. You know, I think they were really brought up in the era of other people's feelings, which is there's a benefit to that.
Sure.
But bullying, and then it goes a little bit too far. You know, where they take it too far, where everything is a sensitive issue. Everything is, you know, a to-do.
Right. And we've talked about how comedians, Jerry Seinfeld, namely, I probably will evoke his name several times. He even has said, don't even play college campuses. Because they can't laugh at each other or themselves.
Yeah, they can't. They can't. And I have one friend who's a millennial friend of mine. We're really close. We're good. Actually, we're close to the point where we can like battle. Like that's when you know you have a friend. When you can almost rip their face off, but you don't. But you're still friends. But I've noticed, I will be self-deprecating to the nth degree. She can take pictures and funny videos of me doing stupid stuff. I laugh about it. I'm a sport. If there's like some little stupid outfit that someone brought into at work, like I'll hop into it and like run around the office like in a wetsuit and like joke around.
Yeah, you will.
I noticed the millennials do not return serve on that at all. And I love them.
You do.
But you're right about that.
So to the point where I'm actually afraid that my nephew could walk in the house and just bust my nose. Yeah, this is for the smack talk. Or not even say anything, not even say why. To the point where I'm wondering, you know, what's on their mind? I have to, at some point, we got to start to understand these people.
Well, you just need to text them.
Because we're high, yeah.
They'll get back to you.
Yeah, that's it. That's it right there. You got, yes, they will not pick up the phone. They won't talk to you directly. They'll just text you.
That's it.
So we have a cat coming up named Dr. Brian Russell. This is where all this is leading. He wrote a book called Stop Moaning, Start Owning, How Entitlement is Ruining America and How Personal Responsibility Can Fix It. I'm hoping that Dr. Brian Russell will help us get to the bottom of this. Because, look, I'm trying to hire millennials. It's not easy. It ain't easy. I need to get inside their... I got to get in their skin.
You're overthinking.
And walk around a little bit. Well, hopefully. And it says right here, Shantae, awesome, producer extraordinaire. She wrote, his title is Shrink, Lawyer, and Co-host of Fatal Vows on Investigation Discovery. I need to know, is shrink a pejorative? I usually assume that that's like a word that you don't want to say.
I know. Well, we can ask him.
No, believe me. I need to. Now, have you... I need to know a few things, Doc.
Right. No, have you seen? I watched some of his stuff. I checked out some of his YouTube clips before we came in today. Yeah. He's like done the O'Reilly Factor and stuff. That makes me a little nervous. Because I think people who do the O'Reilly Factor, they have a bit of a trigger on them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, should I maybe drop Pinhead and Pithy and Opine a couple of times?
Well, and you also
feel
have that
more at home.
You have that bassier voice. I think that brings out a trigger in people.
Well, we'll see if I can trigger something out of Dr. Brian Russell up next.
I do not want to do that.
312-981-7200. It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. You can get many of our shows on WGNplus.com. All of our shows at jonesandmike.com. And this topic of understanding millennials comes up quite a bit. They're like an interesting species. Especially now that in a week she'll be a teenager. My daughter Elise comes in this week with the Dad and Mom, you just don't understand our generation.
Oh, God.
I know. And I was like, oh, no. Here it goes. Here it goes. Here it comes.
I will say, I noticed you are trying to speed her through those teen years. Because when you emailed me earlier about what we may be talking about on the show, you had even referenced her as your 14-year-old daughter. I'm like, she's not even 13 yet. You're like speeding her through.
And I definitely am not. I'm always telling her, like, stay young. Stay young as long as you can. You're going to be an adult for most of your life.
Yes.
So don't be in a hurry to go too fast here. But we have an expert here. Dr. Brian Russell joins us, Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. He is the co-host of Fatal Vows on Investigation Discovery. It also says here, psychologist, lawyer. Dr. Brian? Does the term shrink, does that appeal to you in any way?
Is fine with me.
Really?
Yeah, that kind of threw us off.
I'm shocked.
I'm a man of the people. I think anybody who prides themselves on using big clinical words and talking over the heads of people they're trying to help is not really trying to help anybody other than themselves.
See, I always thought that was a pejorative, that I probably would get off on the wrong foot if I called someone a shrink.
For some, not for me.
All right, well, you rule. DrBrianRussell.com is the website. The book is Stop Moaning, Start Owning, How Entitlement is Ruining America and How Personal Responsibility Can Fix It. Why did you write this book?
Because I'm increasingly worried about how our cultural pendulum seems to be swinging away from the personal responsibility that made this the greatest, freest, most prosperous nation in history, and toward entitlement, which I think is hurting us on many levels as individuals, families, organizations, communities, and ultimately as the nation.
Am I wrong for leaning toward millennials in this discussion? Is it all Americans?
Well, certainly. Many of the things that I talk about in the book, you could point to lots of examples reflected in millennials, but it's important also to keep in mind that the millennials came from somebody. Somebody raised those millennials. Mm. And at some point, parents in this country broke from the tradition that I think up through the greatest generation, probably pretty consistently you could see, of raising kids with a lot of structure and a lot of discipline. And it was actually a very loving thing to do because it helped people become good, self-efficacious, American. Self-efficacy, meaning you can do for yourself. And somewhere along the line, and I think it's probably around the baby boom generation, we decided instead to prioritize self-esteem and to dial back the structure, dial back the discipline, be more friends with your kids and less parent, less parenting, more friendship. And that has not worked well.
Okay. And now, Dr. Russell, you said that this started in the baby boomer generation, correct?
I think all these are averages. Certainly you could find glaring exceptions in all of these.
Right. And I'm not asking because I want to hold you to a number, but I find that interesting because Mike and I talk about millennials a lot on our show. And I actually am a millennial backer. I have a lot of millennial friends. I'm 41 years old, but I hang with millennials. It's odd. It's a long story. But I do. I hang with millennials. They're my peeps.
Yeah,
but
they understand you. You understand them.
Right. Now, I think part of it is I'm not married. I don't have kids. So we are all kind of maybe in that same mode. But at the same time, it's interesting that you made the mention that you felt that there was this shift back at the baby boomer generation in terms of parenting. Because while as many people want to hammer on millennials, I've always had this thing in my head of that previous baby boomer generation where I thought, man, that's really to me the generation that drives me nuts. Like back in the day when it was like sex, drugs, and rock and roll and free love. Like they created this society or this lifestyle so they could get, you know, it was before that was something that you're very careful about. You didn't over imbibe. And then they created this culture where it was about imbibe as much as possible. And then once the free love went away, they became the corporate raiders. And I always kind of felt like it's interesting that I feel like the millennials get hammered on so much because in terms of the me generation, I've always attached that to the boomers. Now, yeah, maybe I'm just an angry Gen Xer.
Is he right?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting. I think that the baby boom generation was parented with that greatest generation, by that greatest generation, with that structure and discipline that I talked about, right? So then you see them doing the kinds of things that you talked about in the 60s and 70s, but then sort of outgrowing it and going on to be, financially speaking at least, a pretty successful generation. And then you see the kids that they raise, not so much, not as much, and you say, well, what was the difference? And I think it really was the absence of the structure and discipline from the baby boomers' parenting strategy. So part of those behaviors that you were talking about that they didn't outgrow was this idea that, you know, you don't need to be as confined as our parents made us. You don't need as much pressure as our parents put on us. We're not going to pressure our kids. They can be what they want to be. We're going to be their friends. And that just has not equipped their kids with that same resilience that they were equipped with, to where even when they screwed up some in the 60s and 70s, they were still able to recover and live pretty personally responsible, successful lives after that.
It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN with Dr. Brian Russell. Dr. Brian, how do I get my teenager and my other three kids, I have four kids, how do I get them to own instead of moan, as you put it?
Well, hopefully you have been doing some things before now, because lots of the fundamental lessons about owning and not moaning are actually learned in the single-digit years. Basic things in life, like you don't lie, you don't steal, you don't hit people who aren't hitting you, you make a mess, you clean it up. So hopefully you did some of those things early on. And so now what you're seeing is sort of the natural tendency of teenagers to want to sort of test limits. And that's not all bad, because ultimately they're going to leave your house and they're going to have no limits imposed by you. Mm-hmm. Society imposes them, right?
Wait,
and so
you said my kids will leave my house at some point.
They're going to leave your house at some point. Hopefully, if you're doing it right, if they're staying into their 20s and 30s, you've really gone to taking a left turn.
Well, and that sounds like that's what happens nowadays, where the boomerang kids come back and they just kind of hang. So I'm concerned.
Yeah, that is a big mistake of the parents who are allowing that to happen. They're basically enabling the kids not to grow up. And part of it is their guilt about the fact that they know deep down they didn't equip the kids with what they needed to go out and be successful. And And be that as it may, the solution is not to continue coddling and enabling on into the 20s and 30s. At some point, those kids need to sink or swim, and they actually would be better served. It actually is more compassionate to let that happen.
Okay.
Yeah,
now,
yeah, I'm not their friend, so I think I've laid the groundwork that you're describing.
Now, Dr.
Yeah,
Russell,
and as they test the limits, what you want to see is, in my book, there's a graphic called the power responsibility continuum, right? And you want to see them assuming more power over their lives as they show you that they're taking responsibility.
Can you hang for a couple of more minutes, Doc?
Sure.
All right. We got a killer shrink lawyer and TV star, really. Dr. Brian Russell is on with Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. More on this topic of entitlement next. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. On with Dr. Brian Russell. The book is called Stop Moaning, Start Owning, How Entitlement is Ruining America and How Personal Responsibility Can Fix It.
Dr. Russell, I have a question for you. Mike and I are longtime friends, known each other almost our whole lives. So I know his family well, close to his four kids. I observe his parenting.
Godfather to one of them.
I'm godfather to his oldest boy, yes. So I have observed him up close and personal being a father. I know his style. And I have to say, very much, he is a disciplinarian. There rules are rules in his house. If, you know, if the kid has a cell phone and it's not on the little charger by 7:30 at night, they lose the privileges for 24 hours. He holds the line. And at the same time, I've seen him out there coaching his kids. He's making sure all the kids are having fun. I think he does a fantastic job.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that.
Now, I do have to say, the one thing that does drive me nuts, though, and I'd love to have your feedback on this, because it comes down to rules are rules, but it's also an element of monkey see, monkey do that I've always observed with him. Mike has never been the most mature guy. And he never misses an opportunity to moon me, fart jokes all day. Uh-huh. Now, when it comes to raising kids, you can't quite be that way. Though I have to say, at the same time, with his oldest, I do see him at times carrying that type of behavior in front of her. And though he and his oldest can clash, and he may disagree with me on that, she adores and idolizes him. So I feel that she's going to go forward and mirror this behavior, and I feel it's almost unfair to her.
Yeah, so essentially, are you saying, you know, hey, can we still say, do as I say, not as I do?
Well, I think a lot of our parents did that in various ways, and I think that, yes, you can turn out just fine if the basic structure and discipline are there. And it sounds like in this case that you've described, they are. It sounds like, the sense of humor kinds of things that you're talking about, the slapstick, whatever you would call it, behavior, if that gets inculcated into the child and some of that comes out in the child in adulthood, I'm not worried about that undermining the child's opportunities to be a successful, productive American in all sorts of ways. What would worry me is if I saw those things undermining the respect that the child has for the parents, and so then the child not having that structure and discipline from the parent because the respect that's required isn't there for that relationship to be there. And it doesn't sound like it's to that degree here, right?
Yeah, am I sending mixed messages, Jones?
Doctor, I wanted you to be so much tougher on him.
You're coddling.
This is really
me,
a letdown. I know I didn't. I know I didn't give you the cliff notes of where I wanted you to go with this. I really wanted you to hammer him.
Yeah, this is an intervention. You're the last one to know.
Then my answer is he's ruining the child. She's gonna.
Yes.
Gonna grow up to be. She's going to jail.
Yes.
Oh no. All right, so this time of year, I love having you on now because this time of year, I get really crazy about the excesses of our culture, of our lives. And your concepts towards, teaching and instilling gratitude, I'm interested in. How do I get my children to live a more grateful life, Doc?
Well, first of all, this is a great point that you're making, and this actually, you know, Black Friday is a great day to be making it, because for many, many years now in the United States of America, thank God, we've had a lot of prosperity here, and most people living here have had all their needs met and then quite a bit, many of their wants as well, and I call that access to excess. When you have access for a long time to more than you need, it starts to feel less like a blessing and more just like how it is. Right. Okay. And so the solution to that, the antidote to that, is exactly what you're saying. And it's exactly what I write about in the book. It's gratitude. You got to get your priorities straight. You got to count your blessings, be conscious all the time of how you are blessed. And it's not an entitlement when you've got more than you need. Give thanks, actually express it. Tell people who've gone above and beyond to help you out in life and done more for you than you were entitled to have them do, how much you appreciate it. And then pay that forward. Be generous yourself. There's nothing like generosity. Anytime somebody comes and tells me they're feeling depressed at the holidays, there's not enough of this, not enough of that, and it doesn't matter if it's relationship attention or material things or whatever, I encourage them to get out there and do something. Go serve a holiday meal at a homeless shelter. Do something for others, and you will find yourself feeling better, usually.
Yeah, I got to get them volunteering. I like that. It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. I'm with Dr. Brian Russell. The book is called Stop Moaning and Start Owning. Do you have like three actionable like kind of tips that you can give me to get my kids to start owning?
Well, I would say that you, in the book, look at that power-responsibility continuum. That's good, because then you can think about where are you now, and where do you need to get by the time they're 18, and what can you do to sort of move the kids along that continuum? That's one. There's a test in the back of the book for how personally responsible people are, and it's depending on how old your kids are, that's something that they might be able to do. I say the book is around the 16-year-old and up level. So, you know, I would say read it yourself and make sure you concur, and then if you do, when your kids are 16 or up, have them read it too, and to use it as a way to start a conversation with them about how important personal responsibility is in all spheres of life, from academics to their professional lives to the relationships they're going to have to just their basic citizenship, you know, their participation in the society.
What's harder, being a lawyer or being a shrink?
They're both hard, but they're both very rewarding. I don't know that one is. I would insult one group or the other if I say one is.
If you had to give one of them up, which one would you give up?
I would probably say for me, I have enjoyed the psychology piece more. But having just said that, a lot of the psychology work that I have done has been around, you know, how do we understand behavior so that we can make better public policy? Or how do we understand behavior so that we can figure out how to reduce crime better? What kind of sentencing should we be doing? Those sorts of things. So if I didn't have the legal background, I wouldn't have gotten to do some of the most interesting parts of psychology that I've gotten to do.
God, you still, you're good. You still said, yeah, Both are your favorite.
Yeah.
You just outwitted me.
Well,
I thought I had you.
He's a barrister, Jones.
He is. He's a top drawer, grade A barrister.
He has a silver tongue, Jones.
Now, Dr. Russell, I am curious what your thoughts in terms of, you know, we've been talking about how we're dealing with kids, and what I know could fill a thimble. I don't have any. But in terms of setting rules, holding the line, I'm curious what your thoughts are. As I'm observing parents, I see this has got to be the most documented generation ever. Pictures, videos. As soon as some kid does something, they make a cookie, whatever, it goes right on Facebook. Does this kind of give an overgrown idea of a child's importance, that everything is documented? I've observed this even with small children now. They get a gift, they make have some accomplishment, some trophy, and right away now they're turning to the parent going, Mom, do you want a picture? They know how to pose everything. It's bizarre to me.
Yes. Yeah, there's actually a term for this. They're calling it sharenting, where the parents can't wait to get on social media and share their kids' accomplishments. And it's annoying the heck out of many of us who sit there and see those pictures and go, you know what? Everybody's kid's done that. This is not that big of a deal. And the schools are actually just playing right into it when they're giving a trophy to everybody, whether they won or lost. They're canceling honors ceremonies so that we don't hurt the feelings of somebody who didn't get honors. Those are the absolute wrong things to be doing because it does exactly what you said. It gives the kid an inflated sense of self-importance. And I always, and I write about this in the book, I always distinguish between self-esteem and self-respect. We want every kid to respect themselves unconditionally. But do we really want kids running around esteeming themselves unconditionally, regardless of their behavior and accomplishments? No, we really don't. We overshot that. We meant to go for self-respect, and we went for self-esteem, and that was wrong. And I always say about social media, if narcissists were alive today, the namesake is narcissism, which is the root of entitlement. Social media would be the reflecting pool.
Yeah, that's why I use social media almost exclusively to publicly shame my children.
Yes, we need to shame these tyrants, I think is the message. Isn't that the takeaway?
Speaking of which, Facebook.com/Dr. Brian Russell, at Dr. Brian Russell on Twitter. You're not ashamed to be on social media, Doc.
I am not ashamed to be, but what you'll find if you go there is that it is virtually all about my work and trying to help people understand the things we're talking about tonight, the news, the ways in which a better understanding of how people work can help you have a better understanding of how we should parent, how we should run our workplaces, and how we should run the country.
Did Bill O'Reilly call you a pinhead by any chance?
Not this time. When we discussed the book last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, no, not in that case. I'm sure somewhere in the dozens of times I've been on there, though, he has.
He squeezed it in on you.
Well, you're not a pinhead. Doc, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Dr. Brian Russell, the book is Stop Moaning, Start Owning, How Entitlement is Ruining America and How Personal Responsibility Can Fix It. Have a wonderful holiday season, Doc.
You too, guys. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate it. All right, it's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. I want to get into this concept that Spike Lee has floated, Jones.
Oh,
where,
I know.
Where ladies should stop laying down, as he calls it.
So we men start laying down.
Right. In order to control men's more base instincts and violent tendencies. He says that they should stop laying down with men. Cut them off. Cut them off, Jones. We'll get into that on the other side of this. It's first the news, though. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and online at WGNradio.com. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Jones, did you see any of the protests happening in the heart of the city today?
Yeah, you know, I live about four blocks from here, so I did. I should have, and you know me, if there's a good protest, I'll hop on the bike and I'll go to it just to see it.
You never miss a protest.
I typically never miss a protest, but I don't know, like today... I have a washing machine that needed a clamp at my building, so I had to go do that. And then I...
Don't you hate when life gets in the way of the
Then I had to move my sister's Christmas tree into her place, and then the Hawks were on at 4, and I was just like, ugh.
Well, that was a busy day for you.
It was.
No
it
time
was,
to
because I have to watch the whole game, so I got a little smattering of it, because when I went around the block... After I dropped off the tree at my sister's place, it was really slow going. So I knew it was a combo of Black Friday and the protests on Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, so obviously it's been covered probably too much, frankly. But I was kind of like, well, they're keeping people in Macy's. There are worse places to be kept in.
That's true. That's true.
Well, they're not letting me leave.
It could be so much worse. No, here's the thing.
Not letting people into the stores on the Mag Mile, grabbing headlines, obviously, but it seemed kind of off the mark. Like, go, I guess if you're angry at the police, go to City Hall or something.
See, now that's where I disagree with that. Like, I don't have a problem with the protesters going up and down the Mag Mile. I know a lot of people do have problems with it because they're thinking, well, let people be, let them do their own thing. My thing is stay to the outer portion of the sidewalk so people can get in and out of the stores. Just simply having that presence there is going to get that same reaction. Once you start interfering with people, now you're becoming an antagonist, and that's going to hurt your message. But I don't agree with people that they just say, well, just protest the police departments. It's,
yeah, because go do your First Amendment, you know, in a, like, you know,
in an area that doesn't upset us.
Uh-huh.
That's where, because the idea is, if you're not going to go up and down Michigan Avenue, if you're not going to be protesting where other people are going to see it and talk about it like we need to talk about it, then what good is it? Now, I don't agree that, you know, you should be busting people up as they're coming out of the American Girl store, but...
Yeah, that's above and beyond.
That is beyond the pale, certainly.
Although I really could have used people preventing me from going into the American Girl store.
Well...
I could have saved thousands of dollars. Where were they when I needed them?
I know. There's never a good protest when you... They're never where you want them!
And somebody actually had like a panic attack in the Walgreens. Because of this protest,
yeah.
Which you think that, and they had to be rushed out.
I guess.
Seems like if you're in a Walgreens, that's a pretty good place to have some sort of a malady.
Is that Darwinism? I don't know. I mean, what got you so stressed out about a protest? Like, you hear people shouting in Chicago all the time.
Yeah, again, next to the Macy's, I want to be stuck in a Walgreens. You got stuff to read. So the protests, and obviously, you know, what happened here in Chicago, it couldn't be... And I don't want to take a totally capitalistic bent on it, but it couldn't be any better for Spike Lee's film Chi-Raq. Will you see it when it comes out on December 4th?
Probably.
Or that's one of the premieres. It's coming out soon.
I mean, if I'm honest, no.
There's not any part of you that wants to see what the hubbub was about.
Not really. Not really. I mean, if I'm just being honest, like just giving you an honest reaction to it, I'm not really pulled into seeing it. You know, and then I see him... Like on Steven, the thing that drives me nuts about Spike Lee, and I watched his stuff like back in the 80s and the 90s, and I was into it, and I got it, and it was cool. But I don't know, none of his stuff has pulled me in lately. I'm not really pulled in to see this flick. The thing that drives me nuts, though, is whenever he has a movie out, he just seems like he has to dress up in like movie wear. Like, did you see him on Stephen Colbert? He had a beret with this little flag on it that said Chi-Raq.
Hmm.
And it's Brandon. Just like
the guy's a genius.
I know. Well, he did the Malcolm X hats and that whole thing, and but it's just I don't know. It feels like it's like a cowtown kind of a way to. I mean, we know who you are.
I think he's on to something with this concept that women should go on a sex strike.
That I
they
yes
should withhold in order to rein in and be the fulcrum that drives our the menfolk. Toward doing the right thing. I
yes
think he's onto something.
And
next
did you mean
to
that
relocation of people out of bad neighborhoods, I think that's actually the best idea I've heard.
Yeah, no, that honestly, that is a very powerful concept.
So like, far, 37 women are pursuing this. That's a start.
Really? Wow, you have to get the numbers up on that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that it originally... So that's like the concept of the movie, right?
Yes. Yes, there's no peace for no peace or something like that.
I like
that. Or there'll
that
be no peace unless there's peace or whatever. Clearly, I'm not going to see the movie. I haven't.
Well, and so I tell my daughter all the time, and she's like, what does that mean? I'm like, you'll know when you're older. I'm always like, don't give up your power. Don't give it up. You've got the power. You can launch 1,000 ships. Don't. You can be the driver of almost every conversation.
And now do you feel that she's not doing that? Can you see that creeping in?
No. Okay. I mean, she's still so young. They're all so young. But I'm trying to plant that seed because I think he's onto something, man. Women could be totally ruling every conversation if they just held on to that power.
Right. Now, okay, with who wields the power in your house, you or Jill?
There's no question. There's no question who rules the roost.
Now, is she ruling the roost using Chi-Raq tactics?
No. Well, I don't know. Maybe she is. Maybe I haven't realized that. Maybe she lets the well run dry in order to force a solution,
I just
a desired result.
I feel there's a better way to say it than that.
Well, you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. I do know what you mean.
No, but I mean, and it's like, wow, you do not have to be a second-class citizen. In fact, you are the one that has the power. Every 11 seconds we're thinking about something, you know what we're thinking about. So use that deficiency in the male species to your advantage.
See, I do think that's a brilliant idea. I think that would be very effective. I'd be very curious, more than even what women think about this idea, because I think if you present this idea to women, they'd go, yeah, sure, totally it'd work. But I would wonder, like, what is the male reaction? Because here you and I talk about it, and we could see where it would work. It would make total sense. But would we want to live in that world? You know what I mean? Like, isn't
it? No, we don't want them to know that they hold the power in that way, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, it was like how long ago that women didn't have a right to vote? There was a vote on it. And it's like, you look at every guy, it's like, how do we screw that up?
Yeah, well.
Now it seems like it's the same thing.
Just a century later, they actually hold all the cards.
What happened to us?
Well, and so, yeah, you needing to up your game for cocktail party season, me needing to get on the ball, I'm interested in what he's saying here, and I want to know. I want more than 37 women to jump on board with this.
Just not your woman.
Well, right, yeah. I don't want 38. She can be. I want my daughters to be part of this.
Fair enough.
But not my wife.
Fair enough.
It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Holding the power. Is Spike Lee onto something? More on this next. This week on Chicago's Best, get ready for a fiesta, because Brittany and Elliot are going to find the best Mexican eats and treats. Chicago's Best, Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. I don't think I've ever agreed with Spike Lee before, but maybe this is the beginning of a trend. I think he's right on.
Yeah, no, he definitely is right on. There's no doubt. I'm trying to think if I've ever, do I have passionate disagreement with him? The New York Knicks, certainly.
And in white men, we cannot jump.
He's right about that.
He's more right than he's wrong.
Wait, he didn't do White Men Can't Jump.
He didn't?
He didn't write that.
Did he direct it?
I don't think so. I don't think he had anything to do with that.
Oh. It just seems like a Spike Lee joint.
It does, but nah. I don't think so.
So, yeah. So my daughter will say, you know, what do you mean, Dad? And I'm trying to keep it light, but I'm trying to plant that seed. Hey, you're going to hold the power when you're older, hopefully in like 15 years, maybe 20. In 20 years, this will come back. It'll flitter out of your mental Rolodex and you go, this is what the old man was talking about.
Right.
Where I can control. I'm the rudder I can use this thing to steer the ship. Spike Lee is saying people need to stop laying down with their men until their men, I don't know, I guess stop being violent. That's all of us. We're violent creatures. And the one thing that the one stimulus that we will react to is controlled by women. So they need to withhold that. And I'm with them on that. We have in a little bit Dr. Leslie Beth Wish. She rules. She's going to tell us more about this. She wrote a book. You've written a book. She wrote a book.
I did write a book.
Her title is Smart Relationships, How Successful Women Can Find True Love. And I'm interested to get her take on this. Especially, this is a crucial time of year for love, Jones.
Why is that? I would think it would actually be... Well, see, here's the thing.
Let me rub your back. This is important.
You know, no, but it's interesting because you said that, and that maybe frames where we are at different points in life. Me being single, I would think, no, this is not an important time for love. You would wait until after Christmas and then focus on love.
Yeah.
Whereas
you're so cheap.
But no, I think that's what a lot of single people, male and female, would tell you. I absolutely think that. Now, you being in a relationship, geez, for almost as long as I've known you.
Yeah.
you have that opposite take. You've got to up your game. This is the season of love.
Well, it is. It is. I proposed in Christmas time, December 21st, 1997.
I remember.
Counting.
I remember. I remember that night. I was watching Nassim Hamed fight Kevin Kelly.
That's weird. That's
no,
weird.
I remember because that's you guys contacted me right after the knockout to let me know you were engaged.
Yeah, right. Right on. And so this is an enchanting time of year, protest notwithstanding, where you take your soon to be betrothed to, in my case, Navy Pier, and then out to dinner and get on one knee and all that. This has to be the leading time of year. Along with Valentine's Day, right?
Oh, yes, from your perspective, your catbird seat, absolutely.
And this, I think 2016 is the year that we marry Jones off.
I don't think we're going to marry me off in 2016, but I'm feeling like something's cooking. Something's going to happen.
Oh, really?
I just do.
Did you meet someone?
No, I just do. My dad had me when he was 47. And I was his oldest, and then he had Eileen.
Oh, my God. Really?
He was 50. Oh. So I just feel like he got the later start. I'm doing the later start thing. So I'm having a feeling it's building towards that.
In this time of year, with you going to family parties, but then there's a friend. There's a friend sitting there. Oh, I want you to meet, she's from the office.
Yeah.
Brian, meet Beth. We need your elevator pitch perfected. Soon. Hopefully Dr. Wish, what a name. Hopefully Dr. Wish can help with that elevator pitch. Unless you've developed it already.
No, see, I don't have an elevator pitch. So, yeah, she definitely will have to help me with that. I definitely don't have that. And it's kind of weird because even when I go to these party environments, I'm one of those people that I'm not attracted to somebody until I dig them. So it's really a conundrum for me. Yeah, I don't really... I'm not someone who goes to a party. I walk into the room and I'm like on a hunt, like looking like who's the available caribou.
Or the vulnerable one. The
vulnerable
one
caribou.
That I can chase down.
Yes, exactly. And pounce.
Well, and so, yeah, and we were talking about this time of year being one where people have social anxiety when it comes to, what do you do? What's your title? What are you all about?
Right.
Have you perfected it? Have you got one yet?
No, I really don't. And that's the thing. I've always been so odd and different, I feel, from other people my age that I don't have that standard, I'm the vice president of research and development at whatever company. So I've never had that, really status zinger. I know... You and I have talked about it, lines that I could come up with.
Yeah, yeah. The millionaire maker and the
bestower of dreams.
That should be your title.
I know. That was one of the... Okay, well, first of all, when we were talking about this, and then you brought up to me, dude, you just got to go up to a woman and say, hey, what's your story? And I've tried that, though. And it was horrible because every woman is like... This creep is trying to alpha me.
What does that mean? They throw the freak in your face?
Yeah, it doesn't work. It just comes off very odd, what's your story? Because it seems like I already have this anticipated shtickle that I'm going to hit them up with. It just doesn't, it doesn't work at all. And then, I know you came up with the going up to someone and saying, I'm the millionaire maker.
Well, that's not the first thing.
Dreams.
That shouldn't be the first thing
you say. No, when they ask me what I do, what do you do? I'm the millionaire maker. Bestower of dreams. How would you ever think that would have worked for me?
Well, and maybe, so maybe we're wrong, though. Maybe it's not all about, maybe the status thing, because everyone's lying when they say that status thing anyway.
True, true.
It's like Facebook. Everyone's just putting their fake best foot forward.
Right, right.
Bragging on their kids for doing the thing that a kid could do, any old kid could do. So I think that there has to be less of this anxiety. Your sense of humor, bro, that's your ticket. I think that's what Dr. Wish is going to tell us.
I would guess that. Now, I did come up with, I remember one time we were rapping and I did come up with, and I have not unleashed it yet, but I don't talk to women and women don't talk to me. But I'd love to know, what's your story? That is odd enough. It might work.
Yeah, I don't. I want to. Could you Periscope that? I want to see that, like a voyeuristic.
Yes. No, I would have to do that because I remember we were out. We were recently out somewhere, and I know you wanted me to bust out that line, but I can't do it with you right there.
We have a caller on line one that says that women have held the power for years, and I guess I'm just the last to know that they've been exercising this. You're on with Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Women ruling the roost and using their feminine wiles to do it. I like the concept for my children, not for my wife. But we apparently have an expert on line one that can shed some light on this subject. You're on with Jones and Mike on 720 WGN.
Hey, good evening, or good morning, gentlemen, and happy belated Thanksgiving and happy holidays. Yeah, just so you guys understand this, this has been going on since before Jesus was even born. I mean, you guys ever watched the original Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston?
I love it.
I have not.
Huh.
I kind of know how it goes.
Yeah, well, think about the backstory of that, sir. I mean, you know, you guys think of, it wasn't about him. You know, it wasn't about the parting of the Red Sea or the Ten Commandments or any of that. It was about how Nefertiti ruled that whole backline story, and she used her feminine wiles to control. You know, they say women can start wars, stop wars,
yeah.
You know. Everything. I mean, you know, I didn't realize it. I have two daughters myself. So one day I'm sitting there with my wife a couple of years back, and my daughters were before their teenage years, and I'm like, and it finally something clicked, and I'm like, and I turned to her, and I'm like, damn, you've been doing this to us for years.
Did you ask her if she got the idea from the Ten Commandments?
No.
Have you been watching the Ten Commandments again?
It's just innate. It's innately wired in, but I don't know if they know how much power they've got, my friend.
Well, she, you know what? She didn't realize what I was talking about. And then she, you know, we sat there after a while, and she rewound a movie to certain parts, and she's like, "Wow, look at that!" And I'm like, "Yeah." I go, "We're that driven, or that controlled?" And she's like, "Oh, I guess you are." She goes, "She goes, I never knew I had that, but." Yeah, unreal. I mean, it's been happening forever.
So now we live in one of the most violent cities in the country, maybe the most violent city. Do our women not know this? Do we need to have like a movie in the park with the Ten Commandments?
The crazy thing is the fact that three dudes are talking about this over the air at Friday night, Saturday morning.
You're not wrong.
We're controlled.
All right, you are not wrong.
All right, thanks a lot for calling in. We appreciate it. It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Dr. Leslie Beth Wish on this subject and other relationship-oriented subjects that will shed some light, hopefully, for us on this topic. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Getting to the bottom of women and their feminine wiles. Dr. Leslie Beth Wish, you got to go to lovevictory.com to her website, and her book is called Smart Relationships, How Successful Women Can Find True Love. And Dr. Leslie Beth Wish joins us now to help us get to the bottom of a couple of things. Dr. Wish, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I am lovely. I love your name. What ethnicity is a wish?
You know, that name, the first time it ever appeared in a document in medieval Europe was in France.
Ah, oui, oui. I love it. I thought you were going to say it was like your nom de plume.
No, it's a great last name, isn't it?
It really is, especially for your line of work. So, you know, we need your help because Jones, a single guy, affirmed bachelor, although he feels like there may be a tremor in the force, if you will.
I do.
This may be his year for love. We need to get him ready for that, Dr. Wish. What are women looking for, and how can he be prepared with your expert help to attract his mate in 2016?
Okay, well, here are some tips. They don't come necessarily from my research, but they do come from research that's been done recently, and there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about it. So let's see if these findings resonate with him and with your listeners. So, guys, you want to have good luck with women? Number one, don't come disheveled.
With
comb your hair,
unkempt.
Clean your fingernails.
Okay.
Iron your shirt.
I got that.
Yeah, he's very kind.
Why is that important? Why? Because what you are signaling to someone when you look disheveled is that you don't care about yourself.
Okay, so the females are looking for someone who is put together.
But couldn't it mean that you prioritize other things? You're a man about town. You have so many things going on. You are so powerful that it's okay to have your hair like Jim from Taxi.
Well, you know, that's a good point. You know, you don't want the extremes. You don't want some peacock guy coming around who struts around the place, but you don't want someone who looks like they rolled out of bed every single day.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. Number one, I don't even think you own sweatpants, Jones. You're very put together at all times.
No, I do not own sweatpants.
Okay. All right. What else?
I don't like track
pants. No ripped T-shirts with holes in them, okay?
No, this guy, he's always dressed to the nines, doctor. So all right. So what else can he do?
Okay. Number two, the second thing that men and women agreed they didn't like in a partner was laziness.
Oh, this is where.
Uh-oh.
This is where I get tripped.
Hit a nerve. Hit a nerve. Okay.
Yeah.
Lazy. A procrastinator. Someone who, you know, fails to make the reservation and you show up at the restaurant and the line is so long that you have to wait and you can't get a table. Someone who doesn't call back.
Okay.
So laziness.
I see.
Laziness.
I would think.
Signals unreliability.
That doesn't create mystery, the no call back? What's he thinking?
You know, sure. Again, it's a matter of degrees. And you're right. Waiting a little bit and not calling the minute the car door slams, you want to wait till at least maybe the next day. But it's always a good idea to send even a text message or a quick phone message. Hi, had a great time. And that's especially important for women to do. For their male dates, because there are three things that men don't like: rejection, rejection, and rejection.
Can I ask you a personal question, Doc?
Yes, sir.
Are you married?
Yes, I am, for a very happy long time.
And to a man?
Yes, to a man.
Okay, didn't want to spring that on you, but I do want to know, does that unnerve him that you probably know more? Does he ever feel like you're manipulating him with your insider knowledge, as not only as a woman, but also as a clinical psychotherapist?
No, he's also a psychologist. I was a very smart young lady. I married my boss. So, no, we don't talk in psychobabble to each other. We don't do that. He is very smart. So we're very well matched. And that's a very important feature. There are studies out there that say men don't like smart women. They're intimidated. But think about this. Don't you want your partner to be your wingman or your wingwoman? You want reliability. You want to trust that your partner, you know, doesn't get lost in a phone booth, if they even still have phone booths,
right,
lost in a corridor. So, you know, it's very important that your partner is someone you not only can rely on, but you can respect.
All right. So Jones is kempt. Jones is thoughtful. I think you said that, you know, you said lazy. It almost seemed like you were describing being considerate, thoughtful, but we'll go with all of those things. What is there a third thing that he needs to work on?
There are two more things that men and women agree on, and then I'll tell you the important things that they disagree on, and it has to do with sex. So the third one that men and women say they don't like is they don't want an emotionally needy partner.
The worst.
Oh, you know, it starts out, in my research, I found that the second kind of relationship that women like is someone with a man who seems to always be there for them, listen to them, sort of like a human teddy bear. And that sounds so good, but now exaggerate that. Imagine that your man or your woman is always there for you and clinging to you. Always there for you morphs into clinging. So this person who you thought understood everything about you ends up being someone who feels like an octopus around your neck. So if you have any questions about what your date might be like in the future, exaggerate all their behaviors. So neediness really gets to you.
Now, Dr. Wish, I do have a question. If I could lay some lines on you, because I think that's also been a stopping point as well. So,
like pickup lines?
Well, yeah. Okay. I mean, you know, you and I have bantered back and forth about the best way to make that introduction, as we were mentioning in the last As we were mentioning in the last segment, Mike has always presented to me like, dude, just go up to some woman and just throw out, what's your story?
Is that a bad one, Doctor?
Well, I've done that, and I've not had great success.
Happened?
Well, I didn't have great success. It came off as very alpha. Like, I was challenging, like, what's your story? Like, explain yourself.
Yeah.
So then...
What is the meaning of you?
Right. So then we tried to modify it a little bit, and Mike came up with, once we're talking about what she does, and then once they ask what I do, that I come back with, I'm the millionaire maker... and bestower of dreams. Those two lines, the millionaire maker and bestower of dreams versus what's your story. I have a third option, but I'm curious what you think of those first two.
Please tell me you don't use those first two in real life.
I've used what's your story, and it's gone. It went over like the Hindenburg. And if you know about the Hindenburg, it didn't
go over well. In flames, that's right.
Yes.
All the humanity.
Please tell me, no. Okay, let's reverse it for a minute. What would you like a woman to say to you? Now, don't get smart, all right? What would you like
this
a woman
to say?
Jones.
What would I like a woman to say to me?
Yeah, she just flipped the script on you.
She did, but she's a doctor, and I am not a doctor, so that's not hard to do. God, that's a good question.
That's why she asked it. That's why she's written books about this stuff.
No,
it's Jones and Mike on 720 WGNN with Dr. Leslie Beth Wish. And you have no answer to the clinical psychotherapist and author's
I don't
question.
Really, because I'm trying. Yeah, I really don't. I really don't have anything that I would like to be asked.
Is there a fail-proof line that you can offer him?
Okay, when I used to do singles groups, and we would practice what to say and what you would like, and I recommended, especially for the women, that they walk up to a guy and say, I'm not very good at this. I just got done in this workshop, and they said, I need to walk up to someone who interests me and who looks nice and intelligent, and that seems like you.
Okay.
So simple.
Now here's, okay, doctor, now we're going to the other line that... When Mike and I were chatting a few days ago, I had created. I'm going to bust it on you.
Yeah, can
in
you
the
hang
next
for
segment.
That? Can you hang around for a few minutes, Doc?
Sure.
And I'm going to bust this line on you, and I want to know what you think.
Oh, you've got it. Okay, you've got one that you think is going to be foolproof.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've worked on it.
All right,
it
Dr. Leslie Beth Wish and the line to use next. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Jones and Mike on 720 WGNN with Dr. Leslie Beth Wish, clinical psychotherapist, author of the book Smart Relationships, How Successful Women Can Find True Love.
Leslie Beth Wish.
Yeah. Are you sitting down
how
for
can
this,
I help
doc?
You?
This is it. This is the line.
Okay, go ahead. You're on now.
I don't talk to women, and women don't talk to me. But I'd love to know, what's your story?
Thumbs up or thumbs down on that, Doc?
I think that's a thumbs down.
Oh, come on! We were working on that!
That's terrible.
I think that's a... How about this one? Okay? Okay, how about this one? No, come on, please tell me that you're joking, because no. See,
no, that, the funny part is, Dr. Beth...
Yeah.
Please.
We thought that was a great line. We talked, Mike got me to use. I've used the what's your story and the I don't talk to women and women don't talk to me, but I'd love to know what's your story. Mike and I confabbed about it and thought it was brilliant. We genuinely thought we were like, that is an awesome intro.
You're halfway there. You're halfway there, okay? Because the idea I don't usually talk to women is not too bad, but it depends what the setting is. You know, when you say something like that, I think what you're trying to do is tell someone, I'm not laying a line on you. But on the other hand, it sounds like I'm not a very confident guy. So women don't like guys who aren't too confident. So what about try this? Hi, my name is, and I've learned this from a recent guest on my radio show.
Ooh.
And I've been told, just you know, what am I looking for? And you just have a way of looking very nice and smart, and you have a nice way about you, so I thought I'd introduce myself.
Can I just cut to the chase and just, not cut to the chase, but could I just, like, chop it down and just say, I have a radio show, what are you doing later? Like, is that the...
No.
God! Yeah. Just trying to make it quicker.
Yeah, radio, it's not that cool.
No,
it ain't
no,
cool.
No. Just your... People like anything that announces who they are. So if they have a woman would have an instant take, okay, this guy's got a job, and it's a pretty good-sounding job. So it calms them down. They don't think to themselves, okay, what's this guy about? So you might want to say something like, you know, I learned from one of my guests on my radio show, be genuine when you meet women, and I want to tell you that you just have a nice air about you. You seem smart and nice, so I want to introduce myself.
Yeah, the best answer is the simplest answer, and what you're saying on its face seems simple, but it's so simple that I don't think most people think about it. They think, oh, I have to have a line, I have to have something witty or pithy.
No, don't be, don't, oh gosh, that gives me a sickening feeling. No, you don't want to do that. And the women in my singles group said they don't like that either. It puts them on guard. They don't want to be more on guard than they already are. They're there because most of the people are there at these bars and places or wherever talking to people who they're interested in because, believe it or not, men do want to fall in love. They want to find someone.
Can you meet a nice woman in a bar, Doc?
Yes, you can.
You can?
Absolutely. Yes, you can.
All right.
Now, Dr. Wish, is this just, we've been talking a lot about the singles perspective, but can these be issues that married folk, a.k.a. Mike Noonan, have to
how
work
can you
through?
Help me,
I know,
doctor.
Mike has it easy in his love life, but still.
Yeah, and how do I keep the spark alive after 25 years, doctor?
Okay, that goes to the question of the study that came out. Let's go to the issue about men and women's different views of sex, because that applies to both single and married people, or coupled people. Okay, so men complain that they don't like when their partner is has a low sex drive and is no longer interested in sex. So that applies to dating couples and you know, long-term coupled couples. Women's complaint is they don't find that the sex they're getting is very good.
Oh, man.
This is where I just stay quiet.
Mike? I think the rubber just hit the road right there.
So what does that mean? Well, men don't like to feel that they're rejected. And at the core, they feel that they have a partner who has low sex drive and doesn't take responsibility for it. They feel rejected. You know, don't you like me enough to take charge of your low sex drive? You know, and is it me? Because sometimes sex is one of the things that couples use to hurt and punish each other emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so you've got to be careful of that, too. So sometimes that's a signal that something's wrong. And so my word out to both sexes is if you do the ask and tell technique, you won't have these problems lasting for a long time. If something's wrong, speak up. If you think something's wrong in your partner, ask them, hey, we haven't had sex in a while. Is something wrong or anything wrong?
Yeah. It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN on with Dr. Leslie Beth Wish, author of the book Smart Relationships, How Successful Women Can Find True Love. What you're saying about what you just said was that women are using sex to be the driver of the relationship.
Well, most women have the emotional management responsibility for the relationship. Not all, because there are tons of women who, you know, sort of like get remote and clam up and don't talk about what's wrong. But in general, they do. And it's always important to find out, are we using sex as a way to communicate that something's wrong? So that's not good. But what is this thing about women complaining about bad sex? Why does that bother them so much? You know, sex is not just sex. Sex is a way to feel loved and special. And when a man doesn't add the tender, loving care to sex, you know, when it's always, you know, the goal is to have the sex.
Mike?
Well,
now,
okay.
Let me answer your question about how to put the spark back in your relationship.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, it doesn't always have to do with sex. One of the things that long-term couples do who are smart is that on a regular basis, they do something new. And the reason that adds the spark back is that doing something different, and it can be something as small as going to a restaurant or a movie that you never would typically go to. When you do something new as a couple, it adds a little bit of anxiety, and it creates a subconscious bond between the two of you, sort of like, hey, we're in this together. So the more you do short excursions somewhere, you know, like a weekend trip or an overnight somewhere, it adds a sense of specialness, newness, and, hey, we're really a team.
That sounds so expensive. Is there anything cheaper you got for me, Doc?
Doesn't have to be, you know, a day trip, driving somewhere, or going to a different museum, going to see the kind of movie you normally wouldn't see.
Chirac.
Meeting people that you haven't seen before, and afterwards the two of you can say, "What did you think of them?" And you laugh and you bond, and that is the important thing that builds the relationship.
I'm working on a theory here, Doctor. Let me know if I'm on the right track or not. You've seen Seinfeld, you know, the episode about being the master of your domain. You know what I'm referring to?
I don't know
to?
That.
Oh, you don't know
I
that
don't
one?
Know that specific
this
one.
Is where it gets
awkward.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping that if you're the master of your domain, that will elicit a physiological response in your body, which will, it's kind of like when you're suffering from hypothermia and all the blood rushes to your organs. And because all hands on deck on the organs, they got to jettison the fingers first, then the hands and the toes and the feet and the arms and the legs. I'm hoping that by being the master of my domain, that I will elicit a physiological response in my body subconsciously. I can't increase my pheromones, but somehow my body will take over and my wife will find me more attractive. Do you understand what I'm saying on any level, Doctor? Is there a way that I can
dream on
alter my behavior in order to make my body become more attractive to my wife?
Uh-oh.
Is this possible?
Not attractive. Is it possible? Well, you know, the mind can do just about anything if you need it to, but I think you're in troubled waters here.
Oh, no.
So what would you suggest then? Because this is something that he really is committing to. He announced this to me a week ago. Mm-hmm. Oddly, I do have to say, the week that our old high school dean of discipline died, mm-hmm. you also made the same announcement mm-hmm. that you were going to make this sexual disciplined behavior central to your life. I do think there's a weird connection.
Like a Shaolin monk, I'm going to display discipline, heretofore unseen in most American men.
And how do you think you're going to do that? What's your goal?
I'm going to leave myself alone in order to make my body be like a magnet to my wife. Because saying the lines aren't working. Something else has to give here.
So what are you doing that's nice for your wife that is non-sexual?
Yeah. I take care of children. I take care of children. We share, you know, domicile responsibilities. I'm not that bad, right, Jones?
No, I think you're pretty good.
You'd marry me, right?
That's important. You know, one of women's number one complaints about their husbands is that they don't share in family responsibilities. Do you do little nice errands for your wife? Do you run her, you know, do you fill her gas tank? Do you buy her little things? Do you pick up something at the store that you think she might like? That goes a long way.
Okay, that's a good tip. I think you just gave me a tip, Doc.
Do you watch TV shows that she likes with her?
All the time. And I even rub her feet while we do it.
Yeah.
That's awesome,
good
right?
Boy.
UFC.
Good boy. Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah. Hawks games.
So what's getting in the way? What's wrong here?
I don't know. I think I need your book.
How old are your kids?
Between 13 and 4.
And how many do you have?
4.
And does your wife have all that responsibility during the day to take care of them?
Nope.
Okay. And is she the chauffeur, the only chauffeur?
No, not at all.
No.
Hey, good. Hey, you're on the right road here. Okay. So what's missing?
It's, all right, so this concept of the cookie, Doc, can you quickly tell me about the cookie and the lion? Jones has been watching your videos on YouTube.
Okay,
awesome.
That's great. Yes, well, what happens to women, this is what I've discovered in my own research, that the two most common dating patterns that women get into is that they're usually attracted to a very exciting man, and there's nothing wrong with that. They like a man of authority, a man with a good job, often some prominence, some degree of competency in his professional life, and that's appealing because that person is reliable. What happens is the women aren't good at reading men, and they misread these men's authoritarian style. They read it as a sense of authority. So a commanding man often ends up as a man who wants to command the life of a woman. And so the woman comes away from that relationship after she breaks up and says, I'm never going out with that kind of guy again. And she overcorrects mm-hmm. her previous pattern, and she chooses the guy who she can say everything to. I mentioned that before earlier in this show, the guy who can listen. And that sounds so appealing, but what happens is this guy can only do that. This is the kind of person who often shies away from disagreements. This is not the guy you want to go with you to go bargain for a car. He's afraid of conflict. And all right. after a while, the woman feels she's caring too much of the relationship. So what does she do again? She overcorrects again and says, okay, I learned my lesson on that one. Yeah. I'm going to go back to finding the commanding man. And she goes back and forth. All not right. a good idea.
I learned something. Jones, are you ready for cocktail party season now?
I think I'm ready.
Dr. Leslie Beth Wish, thanks for joining us. Smart Relationships, How Successful Women Can Find True Love is the book. You're the best, Doc. Thanks so much.
I hope we helped you guys.
You did help. I appreciate it immensely. Have a wonderful holiday season, Doc.
And happy holidays to you and your listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. You can call or text. You've got a concept that women hate women, Jones. This is a thing that you're working on.
I do.
Like
I do.
Like your thesis.
It is. It's become kind of a thesis for me. I have this. It's a very basic thesis, and I want to be clear about it. My thesis is women are haters. But what I want...
But you are a great lover of women.
Yes. Yes. And I want to be very clear about what I'm saying. So over the last few weeks, I've been noticing this pattern. Whether it's women in sports, whether it's women in entertainment, there's this really strong message out there that women aren't getting the same publicity, the same treatment, being treated as equally as men. And for the longest time, I just kind of traveled down that path and went with it. But
you
recently,
agreed with it. You agreed that
I kind of just, it was feeling. So strong. It was almost like it was always just the message. So I was like, oh, I guess, I don't know. Everybody else says it. So I guess I'll say it too. But over the last few weeks, in months really, I started to notice these little things where I was like, hey, wait a minute. Maybe there is something else at work. And my message is this, and I want to be very, very clear. I am a big fan of women's sports.
Yeah, me too, man. Mm-hmm. I always, in fact, now my son, Dominic, has adopted, like when somebody flops, he's like, oh, he's playing like a man. Like women's soccer, women play tougher than the dudes.
They never dive.
Blood screaming down their face.
Oh.
I'd rather watch women's soccer any day of the week.
And all my male friends say the same thing. Like, the women never dive. The women never fake it. They always just play to the whistle. And it's so absolutely true. And I always hear men giving women all the credit for it. Just
women's
this past
tennis, forget it. I would watch that any day. Who wants to watch men play tennis?
Right. But even this past weekend, UFC, the co-headliners were both women's fights. You and I were at a poker night.
Yeah.
All the dudes knew who the women fighters were. We stopped playing poker to watch them fight. It was the second most popular pay-per-view that the Ultimate Fighting Championship ever had, right?
Yeah, when Holly Holm knocked out Ronda Rousey.
Exactly. So it started to, you know, I've been noticing this pattern, and it started to kind of create this little idea in me. Okay, well, it seems like I know men who are a part of this process, totally contributing to it. And it caused me to ask the question, okay, why is this still a problem then? If the women can play in the World Cup final this summer and the ratings match college football playoff ratings, then how come the Women's Soccer League has like 400 people at it?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, as I was kind of processing that, I was like, all right, well, let's look at it from another angle rather than go, well, the men get all the attention. Ladies, what does it take to get some of you to hop into a car and drive out to Lisle and go watch the Chicago Red Stars? I've watched them.
Oh, well, Lisle, that is nice. But
still, though, if it's the Chicago Sky, whoever it is, when the Chicago Fire were out for a season in Naperville, it wasn't like only 400 people showed up.
Yeah, okay, so I will qualify that then. It's not universal. I won't want to watch women play every sport, but I think larger, more to the point, the concept is that there's a glass ceiling and it's men who are creating the glass ceiling. You're saying no. I think it's actually women.
I would like to put forth that idea that women don't value other women enough.
Oh my God.
That there's real value to them. No, for example, you just had a couple weeks ago, Jennifer Lawrence talking about how there's such unfair salaries in Hollywood. She and Amy Adams were paid less than Jeremy Renner on American Hustle. Now, to be fair to the people who are cutting the checks, I mean, that was really her first real movie outside of the Hunger Games movie. So you don't know, is America going to take to her or not?
Right. Is America's love affair with Jennifer Lawrence, is it short-lived?
Right. So you don't know it from, you don't know from there. So that's kind of a wonder. But at the same point, I'm wondering, well, wait, are the male actors more valuable because women would rather pay money to see a George Clooney movie than, say, a Jennifer Lawrence movie? And I get that sense. I get that sense that women hate on other women hard.
Oh, my.
No, it's true.
312-981-7200.
Even outside of entertainment, even outside of sport, I work in the staffing industry when I'm not killing it for the WGN properties. And I can honestly say, I've interviewed so many people trying to match them with career opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I can tell right away where a woman is going to go when she starts off fidgeting. I kind of ask her, what's your ideal work environment? What would your ideal work environment look to you? She starts fidgeting, kind of takes a deep breath, and she's like,
oh no!
I don't want this to sound bad. I don't want this to come off wrong.
Oh my God!
But I don't want to work for another woman. I don't want to work in an environment. Yes, and that happened, and it's the same presentation almost every time. As soon as they get into it, I start going, She's giving me the women hate line. I feel it.
Oh my God. And what do? You just like mark that down? Okay.
You kind of, I'm not going to match her up to like, you know, I'm not going to make her like sell cookies for the Girl Scouts if she hates ladies.
Oh my God. All right. 312-981-7200. Are women hating women? I don't know how that could be. It's Jones and Mike, 720 WGN. The winners of the last two Stanley Cups collide in L.A. in a Western Conference showdown. Blackhawks, Kings, tonight at 9:30 on WGN-TV. They're salvaging quite a road trip, Jones.
Yeah, they are. They win tonight, 4-1-1, 9 points in the last 12. It wasn't looking like that at the start of the trip. It hasn't been pretty, but they're looking better. Trevor Daley has come alive.
He's come alive.
He has.
And you watch the entire Ducks come from behind.
I watch every game. The whole game.
The whole game.
A whole game.
Even when you have to stay up all night and you should sleep.
Oh, no, I slept after the game.
Okay.
I watched the whole game. Then I got a little hour or two after that. But
unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't miss it.
And so you must have been like, oh, my God, I'm really glad that I always make the commitment to watch the whole game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But you know what, though? It's almost like it's not even like I'm glad because I just know I'm going to do it.
It's like part of your regimen.
Yeah. I just know I'm going to see it all the way to the end.
Well, good. And you were rewarded with 3 goals in 3 minutes.
4 minutes. Yeah. 3-4 minutes. That was great.
Yeah, right on. Especially against those Ducks. Did you see Kessler setting down his gloves when Taves wanted to dance?
Right. Once there was going to be no fight, he was ready to go.
Yes, I'm going to gently take off my gloves. Like the way, like, you know, like a royal guard at the Buckingham Palace would take off his white gloves.
Right, right.
He set them down as if they were made out of ice.
I know. I have to say, though, the Ducks... It's amazing. They outplay us every time we play them, and yet somehow we find a way to win. They did outplay us for this game.
They're in their head.
We found a way to win. So, I don't know why they're struggling. I don't get it. The Ducks, I mean.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So this time of year, I love the movies. It seems like they bring some of the great movies out for this stretch of the year. Last night, they were doing a Godfather marathon on AMC. I want to say, which was awesome. They always throw Godfather 3 in the middle of the night, so that's cool, unless you're up at this time, you know, and you're stuck with Sofia Coppola's masterpiece, Godfather 3.
Yeah.
The other day, I saw My Cousin Vinny was on, and I love Marissa Tomei in that.
Oh, she's great.
She's attractive. She's talking about positraction, like car talk, like very cool. She won an Academy Award. For that role?
I believe it was that role.
And
hard
as I'm watching it, I'm going, where is she? What happened to her? Did she get work done like Meg Ryan? And it seemed like Meg Ryan, she probably got work done on her face because she wasn't getting work. But I think that just snowballed on her because then America was like, we don't recognize you anymore. So we don't want that. But it's like, what happened to Meg Ryan? Why do these women seem to have such a short shelf life, even the ones that are recognized with the highest honors in the industry?
It
seems like they are somebody or something is pushing them down and keeping them away. And your thesis is it's other women.
I think that's possible. Yeah. I mean, that's just because if those storylines that would arc and travel with a woman through her 40s and 50s, I'm now starting to wonder, would those characters not be there? Would you not create those characters if that audience was there to support it? And that's what I keep coming back to. I really think it's about women supporting other women. So, for example, every year, I play in a cross ice hockey tournament that supports a women's hockey club. It's one of the biggest in the area. And me and my hockey buddies, we go play in this tournament. We have a great time, have a few beers, hang out. They do raffle tickets, everything. Now, we don't do it because we're saying, well, we need to support women's hockey. We just think it's a great idea. We think it's a cool organization. We want to
explain
be a part
what
of
that
it.
Means. It supports women's hockey.
Well, we're supporting this team, and it's not just like it's one like beer league team. It's a tiered organization where they have 3 or 4 different adult women's travel leagues. So they just want to raise money for their club, and they put together this tournament. And every year we go to it. Actually, I think they do it twice a year, and we go twice a year. Now, I just have to say, in the last few years, I've thought to myself, all these guys, we get our equipment together, we go to the game, we hang out, we do everything, it's great. But I've noticed, for example, and this is women supporting women, I think none of the guys' wives, and I'm the only unmarried one, none of the guys' wives go, okay, you guys are going to the game on Friday night, okay, I'm gonna bring the kids to the game, I'm gonna let the boys run around, they're gonna be bored. But I'm going to stick around for 1 or 2 periods. I want the girls to see other girls play hockey.
Yeah, yeah.
Hasn't happened.
As a parent, that would totally go through my mind.
Hasn't happened.
I want you to at least know that this is possible.
Okay, but see, now there you are, a man thinking that. I don't think women value that track of thought. I don't think they sit there and they go, they love the idea of Title IX, but when it's time to get in your car and drive and go watch a Chicago Sky game, like, come on, ladies, girls' night out. Go get something to eat, watch a Chicago Sky, forget the Bulls. No, not even a thought.
312-981-7200, Jones and Mike. And this this concept is interesting because my wife, who's, you know, she's liberated.
What does that mean?
She's a modern woman.
You, like, allow her to come out of the basement?
Well, no, she's it's liberated. Not like she's some, you know, we're not Amish or anything. Like, we're just normal, regular Joes. But she hates when there's a female sportscaster. And it kind of unnerves me how much she hates it.
She's a woman hater.
She is. And I asked her about this. I said, does this hold water, what Jones's concept in theory is? And she said, oh, yeah. I'm in sales. I want, you know, people to respect me when I come in, and I want to be knowledgeable, and I want to be, you know, esteemed, and all of those things. But when the script is flipped, and there's a woman selling me, she almost has no credibility with me.
It's unbelievable.
My eyes bugged out. My eyes bugged out, and I don't think she's alone. I do think that you're onto something.
No, I don't either. So you even take on the across town on the other side of the dial, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You go through the soccer mom set, okay, ripe Eric and Kathy country.
Oh,
I know some ladies,
yeah.
I know some soccer mom types, and they're okay with Eric, but they hate to a woman,
really?
Kathy's guts.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm telling you, I just see this again and again and again.
That's nuts. That's nuts.
Absolutely. Just absolutely right down the line. Like even Ronda Rousey, the latest female sports star. I mean, her pay-per-views, yes, maybe you're getting some ladies to buy in.
No.
But it's a paltry fraction. It's dudes, I think, mm-hmm. that are backing Ronda's career and going, you're a star. And not because it's like it's gracious of us men to bestow this on this poor, feeble woman. She's anything but. But I think it's men going, yeah, no, we see what you did. You put yourself out there. We dig it.
Mm-hmm.
We're here for you. And I don't see women doing that same thing.
Yeah, when they first added women to UFC, I think there was a curiosity factor. I think there was some subset of humanoids who were like, they're hot. I love it. They're hot.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the skill was evident. And the violence was every bit
on the
women's side. Yeah, as glorious on the women's side of the card. And now, yeah, now they had their own cards, and it's great.
It's so weird, though. Like, you think, like, how did the UFC get? Because before the UFC did mixed martial arts fighting for women, it was pretty bad. Like, do you remember Bodog fights?
It was like out like Oceanside.
Oh yeah,
and stuff.
It was like
yeah.
this Oceanside resort, but it was like female bum fights.
Yeah, yeah.
And they just like dressed them up and just two chicks trying to out headlock each other. But then all of a sudden, like the UFC somehow found like the real fighters. Diabolical.
It is diabolical what Dana White did there. But because they have all of the attributes that you want out of the competition. And but there's no women there to see it, unfortunately, it would appear. Unless they're just passing through the room.
So now what would you do? Now, so Jill, your mm-hmm. wife, mm-hmm. woman hater.
Yeah.
Complete
yeah.
and total.
Yeah. And it outrages me.
Yeah, right. So now what are you going to do with your two daughters to kind of reverse this trend? Maybe even not even show them the world so much like, hey, you can go out and do this, but even get the message to them like, hey, pick up your fellow lady.
Yeah, that just seems so unnatural. Like, do something that you wouldn't ordinarily want to do just because of it's a certain gender or a certain race or a certain political part. Like, all of those things are all detestable to me. So it's, well, no, if you're interested in something, go and be interested in it. You can do anything. Obviously, we all say that. But now I'm wondering, maybe my wife doesn't feel like that.
Oh, I don't think so.
No, but we can't be salespeople because they have no credibility. Or we can't be sportscasters. You, Peggy Kaczynski, can't talk sports?
It's bizarre.
That is bizarre. Well, and so the glass ceiling in Hollywood gets a lot of press. Jennifer Lawrence's open letter talking about, you know, getting less pay than Jeremy Renner. And you showed me this article by Maureen Dowd in the New York Times where the women of Hollywood speak out and say, hey, we don't get any of the good gigs. We don't get the good gigs.
Right.
We're not getting the big blockbuster budget movies. there won't be a woman directing Star Wars? Why is that?
Right. And now I have to say that is where that's an eye opener when you go behind the scenes. Like, I do feel women get enough of a chance to really show their worth in terms of on-screen talent, to really show that there's value there. But when you see like 30% of that article talked about 30% of the speaking parts in the top 100 grossing films went to women. That's still a sizable percentage to do some damage and get some traction. But the behind the scenes, directors, producers of those top 100 grossing films, it was the 1.9%.
Yeah.
That to me is crazy. Now there's a wrong. There's got to be a wrong there. Nothing can be under 2%. And well, you can't sit there and go, it's women hating on women for that, because that's so behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. And it seems like this article, Maureen Dowd at least pointed out, that it's such a catch-22 where you can't get the big budget movies until or those roles until you're a proven commodity, and you can't get there unless you have experience. So you can't win. You're constantly chasing your own tail. Are your 40s your worst decade? Most people say, oh, yeah, your 50s are your best, especially once your kids are out of your house. But are your 40s your worst decade? We'll talk about that up next. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200, Andrew WK, never gets cheated.
He never does. He makes it on every show.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, that party hard. He's having the best life ever. I think you're having a good life too, Jones, even though research says that you're in the absolute doldrums right now. You're right. Smack dab in the middle of it.
Yeah, and I could see where that would be, where that would bear out going into your 40s. It does feel like there's a U curve, they call it. And I would say if I wasn't pursuing this, I could see myself being in that bottom of that U-curve.
New research suggests that human well-being hits a low point between the ages of 40 and 42. It's right there.
We're right there. We're on it. We're on it.
Before rising again until the age of 70. How can that be?
Well, I could see where this would be the most down, doldrummy time of your life. For most people of this age, you now are starting to deal with parents who are getting older.
Yeah.
You're still dealing with kids. And there just is. We talk about all the time, dudes our age, there's just an ennui about them.
Yeah,
a defeated,
yes.
Just ennui. The schedule of the kids maybe just makes them feel like quitting or something. They just don't want to pursue what they really want to pursue anymore because it just hurts so damn much. No, I think that's what it is.
Sometimes I cut myself just to bleed and feel alive for a minute.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And I think if I wasn't this quirky, weird guy that just keeps driving and insisting on doing quirky, weird things, if I just resigned myself to the 9-to-5 and convinced myself that a flat screen TV would make me feel better, a large flat screen TV.
Huge.
Yeah, I think I would be in that same mode because the metabolism starts to slow down. Dudes our age aren't as active in terms of like going out to grab a beer and watch a game. There is a certain hollowness there that you've really got to combat.
You got to punch through that. So, yeah, that makes sense then. So after college, you're working toward, a career goal maybe. And for many people, they reach that in their 30s, or they reach some semblance of a plateau.
I think what they reach, and this is why I think they're depressed when they hit their 40s, they reach some semblance of achievement that they feel other people will recognize in them. And by the time they get to their 40s, after they've been living in that faux achievement state for 3 or 4 or 5 years, they go, man, just getting a brand new BMW is not pulling this off.
Right. It's not driving away my ennui.
Exactly.
Getting a bigger TV does not drive away the ennui.
No.
That should be the mantra.
No, yeah.
They followed thousands of people for this study. And so we're going to assume that they know what they're talking about. But right between the ages of 40 and 42, right where we are, and it's like, man, I don't know. I think I'm having fun. I can't imagine what.
I think we do, but we still make an effort. You and I, though, have always been this way. Even since we were in our 20s, we were always having these insufferable. We love the conversations, but if anybody from the outside was observing them, we'd have these insufferable conversations about what's it all about, man? What do you want your life to be? What are we going to do?
What does it mean?
But I think in doing that, we've addressed that enough that it's carried us.
Yeah, and now we know it. Oh, it doesn't really mean anything. It's all what you think it means. So
yeah.
So make it mean something. So you've seen that it's a bell curve, so it's going to bottom out now. But for everybody, we're all going to start ratcheting back up again. And I've seen that for women, your 50s, their 50s are their best. And I remember my mom saying that. Like, oh, my, oh, it was so much fun. After the vapors, after the change of life.
Right.
And I didn't have to worry about that stuff anymore. I had so much fun.
Yeah, I do. I guess there's such a, it's being a woman, there's just got to be such a pressure cooker. And then once you hit your 50s, I think you just get to a point, I'm guessing, but I think you just get to a point where you're not going to try anymore. You're not going to beat yourself over the head trying to compete with a 22-year-old woman. You know what I mean? Like, I just see that so much, especially even among my friends. Like, they'll sit there and, like, look at some woman on the cover of Shape magazine who's, like, there's a headline, like, going across her waist, like, I learned to embrace my curves. And it's like, learn to embrace your curves. The girl on the cover of the magazine is 22 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and it's insane, but I can see my friends, female friends of that age, still grinding it out and competing against that.
I'm embracing my paunchiness. And I think that once you do that, that's Valhalla.
Okay,
right,
but
there.
And there's part of me that believes that in you, but then isn't there, I mean, really, is there any part of you that you wouldn't think there's not a goal that you would set for yourself where you would be like, well, because here's my thing. I would love, you know, we've had the conversation before. If you could dive into one drug and mm-hmm. never suffer ill effects from it,
mm-hmm.
alcohol, whether recreational drugs, marijuana, cocaine, whatever, mm-hmm. or performance enhancement drugs, mm-hmm. what would you dive into? And I was like, dude, if I could like get on TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, and know there would be no ill effects, know that if I met a lady of importance in my life and wanted to have a child that wouldn't screw things up, I would have TRT billowing out of my ears.
And you'd have four of them.
I would have four of them.
There's got to be some adverse effects.
I look at that and I think, like, why wouldn't, like, when you see these dudes like Vince McMahon, who runs the WWE, or you see Sylvester Stallone,
oh,
they're like going on their
70s. Unbelievable.
And they're like chiseled. Like, why wouldn't you want that? So I still have that kind of in me. Like, that'd be kind of awesome to just be this like ripped machine. Wouldn't that be?
So you want to give it maybe 20 more years of clinical and anecdotal, you know,
before
evidence.
I would dive. I kind of feel like I'm ready to go the TRT route.
Oh, no.
Not now. The only way that I would go is when I just get to that point where I would say, okay, I definitely know there's no chance I'm not having kids. Because if you're on TRT, you just can't come off of it. You have to cycle out of it. You have to do all this HGC and estrogen. I don't want to do that.
Oh.
If I'm on TRT, I'm going to be on TRT
for life
until like I'm 70, and then I'll just become a straight roid head.
till I'm 110.
Yeah, till I'm just like beating up on, you know, old people at the early bird, but it'll be cool because I'll be old too.
That's sick. 312-981-7200.
No, I'll be old too. I'll get to be the alpha male.
Yeah, I don't think that you should put anything. You live a clean lifestyle. Don't put anything in your body. Don't do it. You're the guy that you're the vegan that they invite to Thanksgiving so that they'll finally have rutabagas.
I know.
You serve such an important, you know, in the balance of the ecosystem, you serve a very important role.
No, I know, but that TRT, I just feel like it's calling my name.
Why? Because of this, you want to have this chiseled exterior.
Like, why not?
Yeah.
Like, why not? Like, that'd be killer.
Yeah.
To just, you know, to just be like, because here's the thing, I'm a very active person anyway. Work out, play hockey, so why not Why not have a Jonathan Taves body at 45 and still do it?
That's right. And fight the ennui by having your chiseled 50-year-old body.
Yes.
I like that. That's interesting. I hope that we can do the condom challenge up next.
Oh, God.
It's Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. Now, many of our shows are on WGNplus.com. All of our shows are at jonesandmike.com. And I want to thank Aubrey, the engineer, and I want to thank Shantae, the lovely producer, for their help today.
That was fantastic.
Without them, it's a team. It's a team effort.
It is a team effort. We'd be a mess without them.
Having said that, we're not going to be able to do the condom challenge. Shantae did not. She was not able to retrieve a condom.
Come on!
There is a thing. It's got to be. This has to be a marketing campaign, right? This is next to Black Friday, brawls over Cuisinarts. This has to be one of the signs that the apocalypse is upon us. People are doing. This is like the ice bucket challenge,
right?
Where people are videotaping themselves doing the condom challenge.
I have seen one of the videos. It was great.
It was great. Okay, and so they're usually in a bathroom for some reason, and they're blowing up a condom over their own head.
Yes.
As part of this.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do this, though. I think you want to go unlubed, Jones, if you try this.
I think you would have to. I can't imagine that you could do it otherwise.
The hashtag condom challenge is drawing viral attention through a series of homemade videos that are burning up the internet, according to the New York Daily News. But it's also attracting safety concerns because of potential drowning or choking hazards. I shouldn't laugh. Don't laugh over that.
It's funny, though. I have to say, all the videos, I'm looking at them right now. I'm looking at all the videos, and it's... Well, here's the thing, though. What I'm seeing and what I saw, you're saying they blow the condom up over your head.
Well, yeah, you fill it with water.
Yes, and then you drop it.
And if done correctly, it will create like a spaceman.
Yes.
Like bubble over your head.
It's ingenious. I would love to know who was the first person who thought of this.
So it's not what Howie Mandel used to do with a latex glove.
No.
It's not that.
It's much better.
It's filling it up with water and then dropping it so that it stays over your whole head.
Right.
And then you post it online, and then your family
is
chagrined.
So proud of you.
That they're related to you.
Tremendously proud of you.
I don't think they'd want us to do that in here anyway. There's a lot of sensitive equipment.
No, there's a lot of sensitive equipment. We have to cover the floors in plastic. It'd be a big thing.
Am I the way we fell prey to the Charlie challenge,
which
we thought was real?
You
and I thought was real, and it turned out to be a movie marketing thing. And I don't even know what was the movie that
I don't think it's come out yet. I think they're saying it's going to come out.
We fell for that hook, line, and sinker.
Oh, my. We look like idiots.
Are we positive that hashtag condom challenge is not a Trojan ends?
No, it could very well be. It could very well be. But at least I would be less embarrassed about that than to actually go around as an adult talking to people about Charlie.
Right. We thought it was you could be possessed if you did the mantra Charlie over and over and over again.
We had an exorcist on our show, and we spent part of our time talking about it. That's how, dopey we were.
Yeah, but like this time, we're not falling prey.
No, but I don't even see, this just seems like it's just, this kind of fun, whimsy kind of thing to do. Like, even if it was sponsored by Trojans or something,
it's
still all right with it.
I would be afraid to do it because, I'm afraid of dying in a stupid way.
Yeah, but someone else is there.
Yeah, you should not do this alone.
No, yeah. So someone's just going to pop it, right? Could you imagine if I did it to you and then for whatever reason, I had clipped my nails, I had nothing to pop it, and I'm smashing the side of your head, just desperately trying.
Bashing my head up against the tile.
And you die.
Yeah.
You die in a pool of water encased around your skull by a prophylactic.
Yeah, generally you have a partner in the room with you whenever you use a condom. So if you're going to do this, make sure you've got a spotter.
Yes, it's very much imperative.
you need a spotter over you. You probably should be in a tiled room, a bathroom. I would like if you would add hashtag Jones and Mike to your video if you do this.
Oh, I'd love to see those.
And maybe we'll have a contest.
Oh, that would be brilliant.
But this does concern me. These types of things, this is the type of thing that would, this would do me in.
Yeah, you're really obsessed with that, dying in a stupid way.
Yeah, I just don't want, yeah, I don't want to have to be eulogized and everyone in the church is saying, yeah, did you hear how he went out? Oh my God, his poor wife.
Right, yeah, right. Have you ever, has there ever been a moment, like I know that you've never really had a near-death experience, but have you ever had a moment where you felt like that was close? Not necessarily that you almost died, but you thought, wow, one or two more decisions going another way, I would have gone down than dying in a stupid way.
Wow. Yeah, I think it's a hold my beer and watch this thing like you're describing.
I have one of those, yeah.
You did a hold my beer and watch this?
No, I was with, no, it was after a Black Crowes concert. It was me, Casey, and Cavelli. Oh, we had been drinking.
Them.
Yes. The boys. The Whack Pack.
Yeah.
And we've been drinking, watching the Black Crowes. And
which is what you do.
Right. And out of nowhere, they were at that little pavilion that they have at Navy Pier. And as we're walking out.
Oh, the Skyline Stage, right?
Yes, yeah, Skyline right. Stage. As we're walking out, Jim strikes up a conversation with some homeless guy.
And is his want.
Yeah. And the guy, dares him to jump into Lake Michigan.
No.
And he does it. Jeez. Now, we had been drinking. I'm telling you, the second he went down and hit that water, I was instantly sober.
Yeah, it was panic mode.
Oh, panic mode. Because there's no way. If you ever look down there, it's like 8 to 10 feet down. So we're sitting there. We just watch him just
bobbing in the water.
Go right over the side.
Shoes on. Did he take his shoes off?
I don't know. I think he maybe did.
Oh, my God.
I think maybe he did.
Reckless. So
he just jumps right in. And Casey and this other dude had to lower me by my ankles down so he could have, because there's those little ridges on that side wall.
Yeah, yeah.
But he can't really climb up it. So I had to hold him by one hand while the guys were holding me by my ankles.
You made a human chain to save
a man's life. I made
a human
chain. And then it was almost like when you give a car enough leverage to get out of the snow. I just, by him holding onto my hand and the guys pulling back, it wasn't like we were pulling him out, but it gave him enough leverage that he could kind of walk up the little ridges of the sidewall and come out of the water.
He used you as a rope, a human rope.
He did. And I mean, that feeling, I will never let go of it. When I'm just over the water, out over the water, mm-hmm. being lowered down with my hand out to him. Like if they slipped or lost their grip, I was going in too.
Yeah, so, okay, were you doing the, plan B here. If I fall in, when I go into the drink.
No, I didn't even think about it.
I'm going to swim over, I mean.
No, I didn't do any kind of like, okay, well, if this same fate strikes me, I'm going to do this. I didn't even think of that.
And so, and all of this over being challenged by
a homeless
gentleman.
Yeah.
On Navy Pier.
Stupid way to die.
Yeah, all oh, the
That's
worst.
That's probably
the
closest, and not that I've come to. Well, I was actually faced towards that water, so I guess I was potentially there as well.
Yeah, really, you saved a man's life is what we just determined.
I did. I'm a modern-day hero.
Does he thank you to this day?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a total, like, bro moment. You were there, yeah. Man!
When I needed someone to pull me out of the lake.
Yes.
After the Black Crowes concert.
Right.
Man, oh, man. That would have been a bad eulogy right there.
My God.
Well,
my
yours would have been
mother.
Good, actually. He died doing what he
yes.
loved, trying to save
True.
A fellow
True.
Man's life.
Another guy made a stupid move, and Jones
yeah.
thought,
"Yeah,
my life
I got
is
this.
Still worth saving this idiot."
Right, right. All right. Well, you know what? I think having children in my late 20s, that's prevented me from those hold my beer moments. And also
yeah.
seeing a man lose his senses. A man we both knew.
Right.
In
no,
high
I know.
School. He's still alive, I think.
He is still alive.
But he fell off of a moving car, hit his head.
Yeah.
Lost like the sense of smell.
Oh, I thought it was taste.
And taste. Well, I think they're kind of like the yin and yang of the senses. They
right.
You can't have one without the other. That's put the fear of God in me right there. To hit your head and lose your sense of taste and smell.
Yeah. Why go to El Faro?
At such a young age.
Yeah.
These challenges have to stop. The Ice Bucket Challenge raised like $100 million for its cause, which is now escaping me at the moment.
I know, yeah, I can't even
which
really
I believe
remember.
It was like, well, yeah, it was like for Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or something.
Okay.
Something brain related. It was for ALS. Thank you, Shantae, for ALS, the ALS
yes.
Ice Bucket Challenge. Did you do it, Shantae? You did not do it? No? All right. The condom challenge should not be done here at WGN Radio. If it is to be done, I have a feeling it will not be done by the two gentlemen coming up next. But I could be wrong. The Saturday morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong is up in just a matter of seconds. And this has been a ton of fun. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it was a great time.
Really a good time. I hope that we get to do it again. Jones and Mike on 720 WGN. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.